Off the Ball Rugby.
Like him or loathe him, he's been great for the game. He brings in energy and I couldn't believe it. On Saturday night I came home, my son was wearing all white and he had like tape, like a Pollock hat around his legs. I was like, what's happening here?
Join in the obsession. Subscribe now at offtheball.com/join.
Off the Ball's Football Daily.
Hello and welcome along to Tuesday's Football Daily. I'm Phil Egan. Coming up today, the FAI launches its strategy for the next 4 years. We hear from Joey O'Brien and Stephen Bradley after last night's 2-2 draw at Tocha Park, and we look ahead to tonight's last 16 action in the Champions League. But first today, the FAI has launched its strategy for 2026 to 2029. The three main priorities are to get boys and girls playing more football, to develop facilities at every level, and to grow talent through League of Ireland academies. The findings also highlight that Ireland has the 14th highest participation rate in football among the 55 UEFA member countries, but the FAI says it's the third most underperforming of them. For example, Ireland international teams qualify for fewer major tournaments compared to similar European nations. League of Ireland clubs operate with far lower staffing, facilities and commercial capacity to European peers. Access to clear and consistent player pathways varies across the country, resulting in less contact time. Many grassroots clubs lack the basic infrastructure required for modern participation and development. There's an average of 3.5 full-time staff at League of Ireland clubs. The target is for 15 over the next 3 years. Another target is for the senior men's team to move into Europe's top 20. The current UEFA ranking is 28th. The women's senior team is 18th. The target is to get them into the top 15. FAI CEO David Carell told Off the Ball's David Wilson today, it's a crucial period for Irish football.
It's a new chapter for Irish football. We've entitled it Change the Game. The reason being, if we reflect honestly, we have been underperforming as a nation. That's, you know, understood by a lot of people, but it's actually the facts as well. UEFA evaluate every federation within their membership based on the size of their population, how many players they have in their country, how their teams are performing in European club competitions and international competitions, players, coaches, etc. And sadly, Irish football, out of the 55 federations, when you line them all up, is the third most underperforming nation. So something's not been working. And we've been conscious of that for a few years, and we've been slowly building towards this new strategy. We recently concluded a transformation program, which completely changed the shape of how the organization is set up. We've done that with this strategy in mind.
David also asked the FAI CEO for the latest on Ireland's Nations League games against Israel later this year.
We have to look at this in the round, and we have to look at it through the lens of what's in the interest of Irish football. And it's, you know, leadership requires difficult decisions, and not everyone will support the one that we've taken, but it is equally in its own right a difficult one. And it is in the interest of protecting the game and ensuring that we are able to protect the interests of not only of our men's national team, but everything that flows off the back of it. So no, this is a decision that we've taken with pure intentions. We are in these roles, the board and the executive appointed to be custodians of Irish football, and that's what we're trying to do.
Do you feel pressure from UEFA as well to get the games played?
No, UEFA have not been overbearing on the topic. They recognise the depth of sentiment in this country. Obviously, it's very clear in their statutes that games have to be fulfilled, and there will be immediate repercussions if we don't, as I've outlined when I previously did media. But no, they understand we're in a challenging position. I have nothing further to add.
Now to events at Tocha Park last night, where it finished 2-2 between Shelburne and Shamrock Rovers in their rearranged game in the League of Ireland Premier Division. Goals from Harry Wood and John Martin put Shell's 2-0 up inside just 13 minutes. Rovers were unhappy with the second goal. The players felt the ball had gone out of play for a goal kick from a Cameron Ledwidge cross. Referee Rob Hennessy appeared to point for a goal kick. John McGovern pulled one back for Rovers, and the champions equalised in the penalty spot shortly after the half-hour mark. Dylan Watts, who got the winner from the spot last Friday against Derry City, stepped up again to score past Vessel Spiel, who conceded the penalty. Rovers are 5 points behind leaders Bohemians. Shells are in sixth, 2 points further back. After the game, Rovers boss Stephen Bradley told Off the Ball's Ben Symes he was frustrated by the referee for that second goal for Shells.
We gave away one sloppy goal, and then one, to be fair to our players. The referee points for a goal kick and the players stop, and then he allows the play to go on, and they score off the back of it. And that's really poor from the official, from the referee. That's not good enough. I think if you see it back, it's very clear he points for a goal kick and our players stop, and I know we should play to the whistle. When the referee's pointing for a goal kick, the players look at him, stop, and they go and score off the back. But after the two goals, I thought we were excellent. I thought we controlled the game in every aspect and should win the game.
I was going to ask you about that second goal. You've touched on already there. How much does that come into the players' minds when they see the referee point? Because we did look back, and you can clearly see the referee goes to point for goal kick and then moves on with the play. How much does that affect the players when they see that?
Just so we're clear, he doesn't go to point, he points. Referee points for a goal kick. Players look to the ref more than anyone else. He points for a goal kick, our players stop. It's not good enough. It's really not good enough, you know. It's if he's pointing for a goal kick, he obviously thought the ball was out, or he heard that the ball was out. He's pointing. Why doesn't he blow the whistle? It's awful.
Shell's boss Joey O'Brien says he was slightly disappointed his side couldn't hold on to their lead.
I think we had two up at the 10, how we started. I think we should have went 3 up probably. I think we had a chance there to go 3 up. We didn't take it. So when you're 2 up, I suppose, to come away with a point here, slightly disappointing. This point where how we conceded the second goal, definitely, because I think it was a bad decision, obviously, Fez made to come out, get away a penalty. After that, they had a lot of possession, but I don't think he had a save to make. Maybe one save in the second half. Came off his line quick, but yeah, he didn't really have much else to do, you know.
As always, we'll have more live League of Ireland commentary. This week, it's from Richmond Park. On Friday night, it's St Pat's against Drogheda United. I'll be joined in the commentary box by Vinnie Perth. Kick-off at 7:45. You can hear it on Off the Ball and News Talk and on the Go Loud app.
Now, Di Stefano. There's always tenor when he moves.
From the barrios of Buenos Aires to the roaring nights of Madrid, this episode traces the extraordinary journey of Alfredo Di Stefano, the visionary who redefined modern football. Born in Argentina, forged in the breakaway leagues of Colombia with Millonarios, and immortalized in Spain, he became the heartbeat of a dynasty. But what if the man they called La Saeta Rubia had taken a different path and gone to Real Madrid's biggest rivals, Barcelona? Find out on episode 6 of Richie McCormack's Sliding Doors podcast as to how European football could have been changed as we know it. Coming to you this Monday in your OTB football podcast feed for free.
West Ham are into the quarterfinals of the FA Cup for the first time in 10 years. The Hammers set up a last eight home tie with Leeds after a 5-3 penalty shootout win over Brentford. It finished 2-2 after 90 minutes and extra time. Boss Nuno Espirito Santo was pleased to give the fans something to cheer about during a tough season.
Long but good one. Yeah, I think the atmosphere in the end was amazing. Our fans celebrating, they deserve this moment of happiness. It's been hard, but it's been sticking with us, supporting us, and I think the boys are giving back. So, very good night.
Brentford boss Keith Andrews has defended Dango Ouattara after he attempted a Panenka in the penalty shootout and it was saved by Alphonse Areola.
I think the easiest thing for a footballer to do is not take a penalty. I despise the culture around players that have missed penalty kicks, and I think you know the ones I'm talking about, you know, national heroes that have done it, ridiculed, persecuted. I think it's disgusting.
League One Port Vale have landed a trip to Chelsea in the quarterfinals. Manchester City will host Liverpool in the standout tie, and Arsenal will go to Championship side Southampton. All four ties will be played over Easter. Liverpool boss Arne Slot says his side are braced for a wall of sound in Turkey when they face Galatasaray in the last 16 of the Champions League this evening. The Reds were beaten 1-0 by the same opponents during the league phase of the competition. Slot says it's good that they know what to expect this time around.
They have great fans behind them, so yeah, we need to be so good to bring a result back to Anfield, and that's what we're going to try. Last time when we played them, there was not a lot between us and them. Two very good teams playing against each other.
Goalkeeper Alisson and Federico Chiesa will both miss the game due to injury and illness. That means Gheorghe Mamardashvili will start in goal. He actually came on for Alisson in the previous meeting between the two sides back in September and then had a run in the team while Alisson was out with a hamstring injury. Alexis McAllister says he's in no rush to talk about a contract extension with Liverpool. His fellow midfielder Ryan Gravenberch signed the new long-term deal last week. McAllister is tied down until at least 2028 and says there's other things to focus on.
First of all, I want to congratulate Ryan I think it's really good for him and he deserves it because he's been a really important player for us in a season that we won the Premier League. In terms of me, we are not in contract talks, but I'm not in a rush and that's only a fact.
Kickoff in Istanbul is 5:45, three ties then at 8 o'clock. Newcastle boss Eddie Howe says their last 16 clash with Barcelona is the club's biggest game in recent history. They host Barca at St James's Park for the first leg. Howe wants his players to embrace the moment, soak up the atmosphere and rise to the occasion.
I think it's very much an opportunity to grab a moment that we may never get again. You don't know what life brings. We don't want to waste that opportunity. We've worked to get to this point, so as long as we perform to our maximum, we'll have to accept the result, but we want to try and get as close as we can to our very best.
Meanwhile, defender Lewis Hall is likely to be tasked with keeping teenage superstar Lamine Yamal quiet, a challenge he's really relishing.
I think it goes without saying he's obviously a special talent. I've seen him play in enough Champions League games. I know what he's about, so for me, I want to test myself against the best players in the world, so no better opportunity to do so than the game tomorrow, so really looking forward to it.
Tottenham boss Igor Tudor says his side can play with the pressure off away to Atletico Madrid tonight. Spurs have lost all three games since Tudor took over as interim manager.
It can be opportunity, total different mentality aspect can be used in this kind of the game, so maybe this can help us. I believe that this kind of games can help us to switch in the right way, but always focus on us to grow as a team, to do the things better, and that's the point.
The other game in the Champions League tonight sees Atalanta host German champions Bayern Munich and Bergamo. Former Ireland international Kevin Kilbane joined Owen Sheehan on the football show last night, and with an increase in the abuse of players on social media, Kilbane asked, where do you draw the line?
It does, and it's maybe something that we all would have said is, where do you draw the line? You know, what's fair game? What isn't fair game? When it becomes, you know, personal, when it starts to become homophobic, when it starts to become xenophobic, when it starts to become racial, all these sort of things obviously takes it to an extreme and takes it way beyond any level of acceptancy. I don't know where you draw the line. I remember playing at various grounds around England and across the world when I was playing for Ireland, and hearing various things that were aimed at me and said to me over the years. Whether that's for being Irish, whether that's being a plastic paddy or whatever would have been said to me over the years, Owen. You just take it on the chin, don't you? And that's the way that it is. There are many sports that still have the attitude, oh, well, it's fair game. And that's abuse that's on the pitches themselves and on the field of play. Look, I don't think it's ever going to end, is it? It looks like it's never going to end. It's just you hope that when players are targeted, it's never of that personal nature, and players have to take it. Then that's just the way that it is. I always feel as though that when you're on the pitch itself, it's never as bad as you see the abuse that players take on social media now, because that you're reading that more, and you know you're in your own thoughts. You're not actually in the heat of the game, and you can brush it aside a lot more when the game's going on. And you kind of want to stick it back up to the opposition supporters when they are giving you stick. That's the way that it would be. But when you're seeing the abuse that comes to a lot of athletes now on social media, that goes way beyond the level of acceptance. That's where it is now. And that's the big change from when I played, Owen. That's where it's gone to whole new levels.
And with squads trying to balance the demands of both the league and the cup, Kilbane feels that qualifying for Europe is more beneficial in the long term.
I was at Wembley in, when was it, 2013, I think it was, when Wigan beat Manchester City, but ultimately got relegated from the Premier League. Where would Wigan fans rather be now? Would they rather be in the Premier League, or would they rather be as an FA Cup winner? I remember even at the time, I was working with you guys on Off the Ball, and I was saying, look, I'd probably rather win an FA Cup. I never got the chance of playing an FA Cup final, and I never got the opportunity to obviously lift the FA Cup. But when you think about it in the cold light of day, staying in the Premier League is obviously way more beneficial for a club financially, but it's also way more beneficial to the player. You want to play at the highest level possible, and ultimately playing the Premier League week in, week out, over the long term, is way more beneficial than winning an FA Cup.
There's a really nice segue into Tottenham Hotspur somewhere here, Kev. We might just leave them till part two here when we touch on the Champions League. What was the furthest you got in the FA Cup?
And I think it was a sixth round. I think we did once, in quarter final, which is, I had a terrible record, honestly. I always used to remember when if you ever got knocked out in the third round of an FA Cup, it was the manager giving you a bit of time off. It was nice to get a bit of time off, to get a weekend off, or things like that when you were grinding out results in the Premier League or whatever league you were playing in. So for all that it was, you know, that you had the ultimate negative of losing an FA Cup game in a third or a fourth round, ultimately you got a bit of, you got a bit of a break off the back of it, and you got time to work on the training ground. The way I looked at it as well a little bit, Owen, was I got a bit of time to work on myself physically, and maybe if you had a week without a Premier League game, you could do a little bit of extra work in the gym or work maybe a bit of extra running and things like that. That's kind of how I looked at it, maybe if I got knocked out of the FA Cup early.
You went full Adama Traore in the weeks where you got knocked out of the FA Cup.
Yeah, I don't have that physique, but yeah, somewhere near that, I think. Yeah, somewhere near. Yeah, I tried to, Owen, yeah.
And if you want to hear that back in full, you can do so now in your OTB Football podcast feed. You can become a member and sign up at offtheball.com/join. That's about all we have time for on today's Football Daily. I'm Phil Egan, back with more tomorrow.
To unlock much more from the OTB Football feed, sign up at offtheball.com/join now.